My name is Andrew Kazin. I am 17 years old. Today is June 6, 2018, and I'm speaking with my mom. We are recording this interview in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Okay, so first question. Can you tell me a little bit about your childhood? What were you like as a child?
Okay, well, I grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And my parents lived in a small house in a residential area called Squirrel Hill, which was very similar to Fox Point or Whitefish Bay, a predominantly Jewish community. And I went to, I walked to grade school from the time I was in kindergarten till the time I was in fourth grade. And then I actually walked to my elementary school after that. So we had small neighborhood schools we could walk to and felt very safe doing so. My mother would say goodbye to me. I would leave my house. She would watch me walk. She could almost see me the whole way to my school as I walked by myself. So it was a very kind of down-to-earth, simple, middle-class family that I lived in. I have two much older brothers who are 9 years and 12 years older than I am. So when I entered kindergarten, my oldest brother graduated from high school. And so I was sort of an only child for much of my childhood, but my brothers were around to torment me a little bit. Mm-hmm. There was a joke in my family that A, I was a mistake, and B, and that was not a joke, that was actually factual, but I've learned to accept it. And the other joke was that I have three fathers and no brothers, because my brothers are so much older that they were very protective of me and very, if I would have, you know, friends over, they were very, very protective. If I was on a date or whatever with boys that would come over, they were very much into tormenting the boys that I dated. I grew up, I loved school. I was really good at English and history and the liberal arts classes, and I was terrible at math and science, but I was a really good student, and I was always studied dance and did musical theater growing up. I loved to perform and be on stage, and did not do sports, but I was a high school cheerleader, so that was sort of a sport back then, not like it is now. And, I had lots of friends, and, you know, there wasn't social media, there wasn't the pressure of selfies and postings and likes and all that. It was just a simpler time, so.
Of course, yeah. Okay, next question. Can you tell me about your grandparents or your great-grandparents?
I did not know any of my great-grandparents because they had all passed away before I was born. I only knew my maternal grandparents, so my mother's parents lived in the same part of town. We were a 10-minute walk from their house. We were very close with my grandmother and grandfather on my mother's side. My father's parents had died long before I was born, so I did not know them either. But my parents were both grew up in Pittsburgh, so we were surrounded by extended family. I was very close with aunts, uncles, and cousins, and we would have holidays together at my grandparents' house. My grandfather was an immigrant from Russia. He owned a small tailor shop in downtown Pittsburgh, and my grandmother was a very small, very bossy, very awesome lady named Ida. Ida and Abe, Grandma Ida and Abe Dear, we called them, and my grandmother was a fantastic cook. She put up with no one's crap. She took crap from no one. She was just a little spitfire of a redheaded lady, and I adored my grandparents. And my grandfather died when I was a senior in high, almost right after I graduated from high school. And my grandmother died a few years later when I was in college. So I was lucky to have my grandparents in my life for a very long time and throughout my entire childhood. And they were wonderful. My grandfather spoke with a very thick Russian accent. And my grandmother was born in New York, and she was very proud of the fact that she was born in New York and not in the, as they called it, the old country, which was Eastern Europe. So she would say, I was born in New York City. And a funny story about my grandparents, my grandmother was one of, I think, five sisters. And when my grandfather came to the United States, he connected with my grandmother's family in New York, and he came to the house to be fixed up with her older sister. But he actually saw my grandmother and sort of love at first sight type of thing, and started dating my grandmother. He would pick her up at high school, at her high school, and she would hide her high heels in her locker, and she, because she didn't want her parents to know that she was dating the boy that was supposed to be for her older sister. And she ended up marrying him. She was 17 when she got married. She was your age when she got married. Yeah. Wow. And my mother's older sister, my Aunt Gertrude, was a big influence on my life. She was a very strong, very intelligent woman, as was my mother, Beverly. And my father was one of four boys, and there was also he also had a sister. And the four boys in my father's family, my uncles, were also very much a part of my childhood. We were with once either the Foreman side, my mother's side, or the Elevitt side, my father's side, all the time. We were with the relatives a lot, and it was a really wonderful, warm, loud, funny, food-focused family, and we had a lot of shared a lot of good times together.
Nice. Okay. That's cool. I think I knew the story about the Grandma Ida with the shoes in the locker. That's cool. So, but it wasn't like a Romeo Juliet type of thing.
No. Like, and it wasn't like it wasn't scandalous. I mean, everybody was okay with it. At least I didn't hear that it had ever been scandalous.
Okay.
I don't think. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't like horrible. It wasn't unusual for a woman to get married as a teenager back in that time. That was a long time ago. That was probably, my mother was born in 1925, I believe. So this was probably before 1920. Women just got married very young at that time. So, and they stayed married for, over 60 years. And there was never a problem in the family. The older sister did go on to get married and have children herself. So it was all totally fine after that.
Okay, cool. Tell the story of how you met Dad.
Oh, okay. How did I meet David Kazin? All right. Well, I went to school at the University of Cincinnati and graduated with a degree in radio, television, and film. And I took a job after college at a television station and moved to an apartment with one of my close friends from college. And the funny thing was, we found out about this apartment through an old boyfriend of mine who lived there. So we moved to this apartment complex, and the old boyfriend moved away to a different city, so he wasn't around. And a year after we moved there, we were at a pool party at the complex swimming pool, and my downstairs neighbor, who worked with Dad at General Electric in Cincinnati, designing aircraft engines. He brought Dad, who lived in a suburb. We lived near the university, in like what would be equivalent of sort of like the east side of Milwaukee, where the young people were.
Yeah.
Your dad, David, moved to Cincinnati after graduating from University of Illinois, and he was a suburban kid, so he looked for an apartment in the suburbs. So he lived about 20 minutes away in the suburbs with like married couples and not a lot of action. He also had a swimming pool at his apartment complex, but my apartment complex had parties at the pool every weekend.
Wow.
And they would have kegs and it was a little crazy and it was a lot of fun. So we would go to, I would go to the pool on the Saturday afternoons for the parties, but it happened to be a Sunday that I went to the pool and it was very quiet on a Sunday, maybe late morning, I think. And my neighbor John brought this boy who was this cute, tall, well, he's not super tall, but compared to me, he was tall, tall, thin, dark haired. Mm-hmm. And we were all sitting and sitting and reading the Sunday paper out at the pool. And I had the art and leisure section open because I love movies and theater and, and concerts. And I saw an ad for a music fest, not a music festival, but a concert of an oldies group called The Temptations and The Four Tops. They were two Motown groups that were doing a concert at the local performing arts outdoor place. And I made a comment that, oh, that would be a really fun concert. And it was, this was in maybe mid-June and the concert was at the end of July. And I said, whoa, that would be a really fun concert to see. And Dad said, yes, but I don't really want to wait that long for our first date. And now the joke is that that was his one moment of game. Like he says, I never had game. I had one good line. And that was the line I used on your mother. And that is why you are all here. So, so I happened to work, when I worked at the TV station, I got a lot of freebies because people would drop off tickets and things at the TV station. And so I had free movie tickets for the fall, for every Tuesday in the summer, I think. And I said, oh, well, I have free movie tickets for Tuesday night to see this movie. It was actually Legal Eagles with Robert Redford and Deborah Winger. And it was about these lawyers in New York City. And and your father is not one to turn down a free date. And I'm an idiot for setting up a relationship where freebies would be a big element going forward. And it still is. And now that I write for newspapers and magazines, I still sometimes get freebies and your father still really gets into the free stuff. So, so we went to the movies a couple days later. And, I remember I opened the door of my apartment and Dad looked at me and said, wow, you clean up nice. Cause I had been at the pool with a ponytail and no makeup. And I, you know, got ready for a date and put on a cute outfit and blow dry my hair and stuff. And he was in a polo shirt and jeans. And I said, wow, you clean up nice too. Yeah. So that was our first date. And then guess where we went after the movie? In Cincinnati.
Skyline?
No, close. Grater's Ice Cream. Graders, yeah, we had Grater's Ice Cream. He did buy the ice cream and I had the free movie. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Good. Awesome. Describe your marriage proposal.
Okay, this is a funny story because this is still, every time I hear about an awesome marriage proposal, I bring this up as not being a very awesome marriage proposal. But, you know, it took 4 years, which was a long time when you're out of college and dating in living in a city. Dad got, the ring. We actually went and looked at rings together. A relative of Dad's, Kevin Browdy in Chicago, owned a chain of jewelry stores at the time. And he had access to diamonds and we went and I picked out two diamonds and two settings and left it up to Dad to decide which one he would get for me. And smart guy, he got the one that was slightly bigger. So that was nice.
I thought you were about to say you got the cheaper one.
No, I think it was the more expensive one. But since he had a connection, it wasn't terribly, you know, he had always, hey, such a deal. So anyway, so he had the ring and I sort of knew it was coming, but he told me that he had to go to a dinner at a restaurant that overlooked the city of Cincinnati with his boss and his boss's wife and would I like to come along? And I said, sure. And it ended up that was a lie. We actually went to dinner by ourselves at this nice restaurant called The Celestial. And before dinner, Dad came to my apartment and proposed in my apartment and then gave me the ring in a mug that had Boris and Natasha on it. He put the ring in this mug because Boris and Natasha were, it was from a an old cartoon that he really liked that he thought was sort of our thing, but it was really his thing because I'm not a huge Boris and Natasha fan. But anyway, I still have the mug. It's upstairs. And we went to the, so he just kind of proposed in my apartment, and then we went to the restaurant, and we said, you know, we could just got engaged. And the waitress said, well, why didn't you give me the ring? I would have put it in a glass of wine for her. And I was like, that would have been a good proposal. That's the joke, is that his proposal was less than, you know, wonderfully creative, but I said yes anyway.
You said so yes.
I did. Okay, fortunately for you, the important thing is you are legal. We did get married, and your older brother and sister are also legal, and everything's quote unquote kosher.
Everything's good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Tell me about where you grew up and what your childhood was like. I think you already answered this. Yeah, you already answered this one.
You want me to talk about it some more?
No. I think there's more questions about it. Yeah, exactly. Did you have a nickname? How did you get it?
I really didn't. My nickname, I mean, some people called me Joni, but I had an aunt that called me Joni Baloney. I really didn't have a nickname. My brothers, my oldest brother, Alan, his nickname, our last name was Elovitz, so his nickname was Vitz, and then our middle brother was Little Vitz, and I was also Little Vitz or Little Girl Vitz, but that didn't really stick. I was just sort of Joni.
Okay,
got
it. Tell me about your siblings. Were you close with them?
Yes, even though my siblings are much older than I am, like I said, they're 12 years and 9 years older than I am, I was close with them. And when my brother went to college, he stayed in Pittsburgh and went to Pitt. And we would go visit him at his apartment. It was only 10 minutes from our house. And my other brother, Lee, so my oldest brother, Alan, went to Pitt. My other brother, Lee, he actually moved to Northern Kentucky when I was in high school and took a job in retail, but he moved back a few years later. So, and then when I was 13, Alan got married. That was a highlight of my childhood, was being a junior bridesmaid in my older brother's wedding at the age of 13. And he and his wife had a baby when I was 16, and I was obsessed with my new baby nephew, whose name is Larry, who is now in his 30s. Anyway, and so they moved to Dayton, Ohio, and I used to go visit them in Dayton all the time because we were very close, and I would go and visit them and, you know, help them with their kids and hang out with them. And and so, yeah, I was close with my brothers. Even though we live far away from each other, I'm still close with my brothers. We spend Thanksgiving with Alan. We go to Dayton. He still lives there to see Alan and his family. That's one of the reasons I went to the University of Cincinnati, was because it was close to where my brother lived, and my parents were very happy that he would be close enough that I could go to his house if I needed to, and he could come and take me to dinner and things like that. And Grater's Ice Cream was another reason. And the program that I was studying, I was a broadcasting major in the School of Music there, and that was the third reason. So it was a determining factor in why I picked a school, was my proximity to my brother and his family, and my favorite ice cream.
Wait, so how'd you find out about Grater's?
When I went to visit the University of Cincinnati, my friends who took me there I had a friend who was already a student there, and he took me to Grater's, and he said, you're going to love this, and I was absolutely obsessed with Grater's ice cream from then on, and still am.
Yeah, so it's very good.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Okay. Are there any funny stories people tell about you from when you were growing up?
There are actually many funny stories that people tell about me. When I was a baby, I think I was about 18 months old, the movie Goldfinger, which was an early James Bond movie.
Good movie.
Yeah, was very popular. And my mother was very into music, and she got the record of the song Goldfinger. Mm-hmm. And she used to play it over and over and over. And I somehow picked it up and started singing it. And I would sing Goldfinger. I could barely talk, but I would sing Goldfinger. And my cousins to this day will say to me, "Sing Goldfinger," because I was this little baby who was singing a song pretty much, you know, in baby talk. But mm-hmm. So that's one of the stories, is that I sang Goldfinger as a baby. Another story, this is pretty embarrassing, but so I was 10 years old, and my brother Lee, my middle brother, wasn't going to college, but didn't really know what he wanted to do with his life. So my aunt and uncle decided to offer him a trip to Israel to live on a kibbutz to kind of find himself. So the night before he left, we had a little going away party in our little house, and it was the height of the streaking era. I decided to, I think he offered to pay me $10 or something if I would streak at the party. And I was 10 years old. There wasn't really much to show. Mm-hmm. So there was nothing. It was nothing for me to, and it was a thing. Like, people would just be streaking. So I went up to my bedroom and I took my clothes off and I ran down the front steps of the house through the party, which was just family. Through the living room, dining room, out the back door in the kitchen, around, we had an alley, around the alley, and back up the steps. And I never ran so fast in my life, but I did it. And that's just what people did back then. And that's, I was a kid. I don't know if I had been, you know, if I would have done it 10 years later when I was an adult, you know, sort of a grown female. But yeah, so that's another story that my family tells.
Were you wearing a mask?
No.
Okay.
Why would I cover my face? I'm streaking. That'd be the last thing.
That's what you do when you streak. You wear a mask.
No. People streak without masks. Okay. Back in the 70s, they did anyway.
So people just randomly streaked in the 70s.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. You could Google streaking and you would see different people. And it wasn't usually kids. Yeah. But my parents knew about it. Everybody laughed. It was pretty funny. Mm-hmm. So.
Of course, yeah.
Anyway.
That's funny.
Yeah.
All right. Next question. What was the worst thing you did as a kid?
Oh, wow. If I answer this question, will you then answer this question? No, I'm kidding. The worst thing I did as a kid. Let's see. I never did anything bad. No, I took... Okay, my mother had a razor that changed blades in like a circular pattern, and there were 5 blades in it, and I took it and I accidentally, I think I flipped it to blade number 2, and I don't remember if I thought, oh, this was cool, and I just kept flipping it, but I ended up, she was on blade number 5. And it was brand new and she hadn't used the blades.
Yeah.
So she took it back to the store and said, "Something's wrong with this. I can't get it to flip," because I had flipped all the blades and it was not usable anymore.
Oh, dang. Okay. Yeah.
So that was kind of the worst thing I ever did.
Got it.
I didn't drink in high school. And I didn't really do anything else wrong. I was very... I was a very much a goody two shoes.
Two shoes.
Yes,
yeah, okay.
Kind of back then.
Got it.
Still am a little bit.
Still am a little bit, yeah. Okay. Did you like school? Why or why not?
I liked school a lot. I was really good at school. I did well, and I was, because I was a goody two shoes, my teachers loved me. Mm-hmm. And so I got a lot of special attention at school. My school was actually it was a very diverse school student population. Mm-hmm. So there were, you know, a lot of different ethnicities in our school.
Yeah.
Very high percentage of Jewish kids, similar to Nicolay, a very high percentage of Jewish kids, and then other ethnicities of other types of people. So it was, I was not sheltered from, you know, from different types of people. I was on the cheerleading squad with a girl who had a 2-year-old baby.
Oh my God.
Yep. And so that was interesting. And the cheerleaders at our school were not like, oh my gosh, you have to be awesome to be a cheerleader. It was, you know, you just really had to be able to dance, and it was a pretty easy thing to do. It wasn't revered like it is at some schools. And I was on the student newspaper. I was the copy editor for the yearbook. I did a lot of things that related to writing because that was what I was best at. And then I did a lot of plays. In terms of school, you know, we had similar to APs and Accelerated, we had the Scholars Program. Mm-hmm. So I was in pretty much all Scholars classes. And so I didn't have to work that hard, kind of like you. I didn't work all that hard to get good grades.
Yeah.
And then when I got to college, I realized I had to really figure out how to work a lot harder.
Mm-hmm.
So as you will, I would think.
Of course.
But I had really good teachers like you do, who were really, you know, interested in us succeeding. And my high school was known for being a really top performing high school.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, that's
good. It was a good experience.
Yeah, that's good. Okay. What are your most vivid memories of school?
Oh, my most vivid memories of school. Well, I remember my locker got broken into.
Oh, wow.
And my coat was stolen. So, and that happened to a bunch of us. And the principal invited us to keep our coats in his inner office after that.
Mm-hmm.
So I was always going into the principal's office to get my coat. We didn't really do backpacks back then.
Okay.
But I kept my coat in the principal's office. What do I remember from high school?
Most vivid memories.
Most vivid memories. Okay. I remember our school had a very long staircase that led, the entrance to the school was up this very long staircase. And I remember walking up the staircase of the school in the winter. And, you know, the winters in Pittsburgh were pretty rough. So it was, and I didn't have a car. I never drove to school. I didn't have a car. So I would walk to school and I would have to bundle up in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And so that wasn't always fun. And sometimes my dad drove me, but
yeah.
But anyway, that what other vivid memories do I have? I remember the day we took the activities pictures for the yearbook. I can't remember what club it was, but a friend of mine put me on his shoulders for a picture. And I remember thinking I was going to fall off. I got a job my senior year of high school. I worked at a department store in downtown Pittsburgh in the portrait studio selling portrait pack, calling people to ask them to come get their picture taken.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to take the bus downtown like 3 days a week after school.
Wow.
What else do I remember about school? What other vivid memories? I remember working in the yearbook office with the other yearbook people typing things. We didn't have computers. We typed everything on typewriters.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I was in high school when President Reagan, let me think here. The hostages were freed on the day that, I believe it was President Reagan's inauguration, and that the hostages were coming home the same day that President Reagan was being inaugurated. I'm pretty sure that lined up, and I remember writing about that for the yearbook. I remember the day John Lennon was shot. People I was in high school and people were really upset. It was very upsetting.
Yeah.
I remember after President Reagan was elected, very similar to when Trump was elected, some of the goth people in my high school, we didn't call them goth, but they were, you know, a little on the goth side, and they wore black for the death of our country when Reagan was elected because
wow.
they thought it was going to be an awful thing, and now it's like, well, that was those were the good times compared to Trump. Not to get political, but what else do I remember? I remember doing homework while watching TV with my mom, because we were very into award shows, and so I'd be like up late watching the Oscars and doing my homework. What else? And she would say, are you sure you don't have to go up to your room and work on this? And I was like, no, I'm good. And I would sit on the couch and do my homework while I was watching TV with her. What else do I remember? I remember graduation, which was a lot of yelling, a lot of people yelling when names were called. What else? That's kind of it really for high school.
Okay.
That's
fine. What did you do during the summer when you were off from school?
Oh, during the summer, when I was younger, I went to dance camps.
Mm-hmm.
My dance studio had a 4-week camp program at a college, and we would live in the dorms and go to dance class all day long.
Mm-hmm.
And then at night, we would rehearse for a performance at the end. The parents would come, and we would perform different musical numbers. So I did that for a while. I did a lot of babysitting in the summers. I think I made like $1, $2 an hour. Was not very, did not get paid very much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not that much.
What else did I do? Dance camp, babysitting. Then I got this job. So then I started, I would work in the summers at the portrait studio.
Oh, okay.
And,
cool.
And I still would take dance. And go and I think I still went to dance camp even in like my later years of high school.
Nice. What jobs did you have when you were a teenager, and what did you do with the money you earned? Kind of already answered this.
Yeah, but babysitting. I worked at the portrait studio. I worked for Roy Rogers Chicken Restaurant, which was near the university. And so I would take a bus in my Roy Rogers westerny, horrible western outfit. There was like red and white gingham, like ruffly awful. And one of my close friends worked down the street at the Arby's. Mm-hmm. And so we would sometimes be able to take the bus together. And I would have to stand there and say, when people came in, I would have to say, "Howdy, partner. Welcome to Roy Rogers. What would you like to eat?" But then when the managers weren't looking, we would eat the chicken. Like, we would hide and eat the chicken. And I think they knew, but they didn't care. So yeah. I probably gained some weight that summer eating all that chicken. So the portrait studio and then the restaurant and babysitting. What did I do with the money? I saved the money.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I spent too much money. I think I saved it for college and didn't make a ton, but made enough to, you know, maybe do a little shopping before college. And then I got jobs during college that I helped to pay my housing. You know, college bills and things like that. But yeah, I tried to sock money away back then. Mm-hmm. So
yeah. Okay. How did you find your way to your current job/career?
Oh, okay. How did I find my way to my current job/career? Well, I didn't study journalism in college, but I did study TV broadcasting and radio and radio, TV and film in a broadcasting major. So I did learn how to interview people, and I learned how to kind of edit those interviews so that you pull out like the juicy nuggets
mm-hmm.
of somebody's story to write about and how to take somebody's quotes and you know, put them in and set them up so that they tell the story that you want to tell. Mm-hmm. And I use all of that now when I interview people for the articles that I write for magazines and newspapers. So mm-hmm. so I took a long time off. So I went to work for a television station in the promotion and marketing department. And then I went to work for an advertising agency as a copywriter. And I wrote brochures and I wrote scripts for training videos and ads and press releases. And then I had kids and took some time off to raise my kids. Mm-hmm. And when actually it was when you were born that I got a computer and was able to do some, no, I must have gotten a new computer because I remember, oh no, that was, anyway, I did some freelance work for the ad agency that I had left. They had some projects that they hired me for so I could work at home while you guys were little. Mm-hmm. And I did that for a long time. And then when we, in every city that we've lived in, I've written for the local magazines and newspapers there. So in Cincinnati, I used to do restaurant reviews. When you guys were little, we would go to restaurants that were family-friendly, and I would write about how the restaurant handled families.
Yeah.
And the name of the column, it was a newspaper column on Fridays, and it was called Yum. And we had rotating set of writers, so I would take you guys and, you know, write about if they were nice to kids, if they had high chairs, what the menu was like, and, you know, and I would quote you guys at different restaurants. And mm-hmm. they would pay me enough to cover the cost of the meal and a little bit extra to cover my time, so I wasn't making a ton of money. But that was when I started writing about food. And now I write about food for the Journal Sentinel on a pretty regular basis. So, you know, you have to come up with a lot of ways to say something tastes good, like delicious and yummy and decadent and, you know, those kinds of things. So, mm-hmm. So I started doing freelance work when you guys were little and continued in every city that we lived in. And now that we're here, I write food stories for the newspaper and I write feature stories for, Milwaukee Lifestyle Magazine and Milwaukee Magazine. And I do some blogging and I help kids with college essays and resumes. And so I feel like I actually considered going for a master's degree in journalism, but it just kind of never fit into, you know, the whole parenting thing. And we did move twice. So that sort of was all encompassing for our family. And, but I did look at that for a while and didn't pursue it. And I don't know that that would have changed the course of my career had I gone for a master's in journalism.
Yeah.
It probably would have. I probably would have been a more serious journalist because really I focus on features and I kind of focus on what they call fluff pieces. You know, I'm not exactly like writing about politics or you know, government or anything like that, but I write for, you know, art and leisure sections of newspapers. And so, yeah, I mean, I went to college wanting to be a Katie Couric or, well, at the time it was Jane Polly. I wanted to be a big-time news person, and I didn't really have the drive for that. I wasn't really aggressive enough. I know you find it hard to believe that I wasn't aggressive enough, but I really wasn't aggressive and you really had to be very aggressive to get to that position. And also I really liked the behind the scenes stuff at the TV station. Like I didn't love the idea of going out and interviewing people who, you know, who were had just lost their families in a fire or, you know, things like that. Like I really only wanted to focus on like the fun things. So, I didn't like serious news. So that's why I never pursued that. But if I could do it again, I would maybe try to be a little more aggressive and try to be an on-air personality, because I think if I had just pushed out of my comfort zone a little bit more and tried to, you know, get over the fact that I would have to shove a microphone in somebody's face when they were crying.
Yeah.
You know, that can be done in a sensitive, compassionate way. And I don't think I was mature enough to realize that if I, you know, learned how to do that, it would be a different approach to that. Mm. And I just sort of said, no, I'm going to do behind the scenes. So yeah. That's okay. What I focused on.
Awesome. Okay. Last question. Thinking of the jobs you've held, we only have 5 minutes left in the interview. Thinking of the jobs that you've held, tell me about your favorite or least favorite.
Oh, wow. My favorite and least favorite jobs. Wow. I guess my favorite job would have to be the projects that I currently work on, because I really do love writing about the Milwaukee food scene,
yeah.
Interviewing chefs and people in the food industry for different publications. So I really enjoy that. And like some projects that were really cool were, I don't know if you remember, but last summer I went to a farm and interviewed a farmer who was hosting a dinner with different chefs, and I interviewed the chefs and I interviewed the farmer and the people working at the dinner, and it was all for a charity, and that was pretty cool thing. So that would be my favorite job is writing about food.
Yeah.
And my least favorite job would have to be that chicken restaurant. I love writing about food. I don't love working in the food industry. Mm. So that was not fun to deal with, like, you know, mopping the floors of the kitchen and cleaning the grills and things like that. And we had to do all of that. And that was awful. So I'm glad I'm not in the fast food business mm-hmm. anymore. But yeah, and my dad was in the restaurant and bar business. He and his brothers owned a few restaurants, and then he went to work. He worked in a restaurant as a bartender for a long time. So I grew up around restaurants and food and bars, and that's probably why I'm not much of a drinker, because my dad, we would stop into his bar all the time, and it was nothing for me to be, you know, 16 mm-hmm. years old sitting and eating a hamburger at the bar while my dad was, like, serving drinks to people.
Yeah.
So it's funny that I write about food and restaurants, but from a completely different perspective. Like, I want no parts of, you know, working in a restaurant exactly. or being in that industry. But I do love writing about that. And just from being a mom to you guys, I, you know, became a fairly decent cook.
Yeah.
So my bio thank you. Mm-hmm. My bio does say that, I'm better at writing about food than cooking it. So when I do food stories and some of the magazines ask for a bio, and that's my thing, is I'm better writing about food than cooking it, but I do like to do both. And my favorite thing is to eat the food.
Exactly.
So, yeah,
exactly.
That's the fun part. So mm-hmm. anyway.
Yeah, there you go. Awesome. All right. Perfect.